Hi everyone, just a little heads up about this episode. In between recording the first episode of season 8 and recording this one, Zoom decided to make some updates to its program. It didn't ask me if I wanted to make those updates, it just forced them on me. And in one of those ways that makes a podcaster's life so full, changed a bunch of the settings that I had to reconfigure before recording this episode with Amanda. And while I was able to record audio successfully, it was recording my voice in a manner that I did not realize. And so you're going to hear in this episode, at least on my end, the audio is more echoey than you would normally hear. Amanda sounds fine, as always, but I am a little more echoey. And so I don't want to re-record the episode because it was just a spontaneous conversation that Amanda and I had. And the audio is not that bad, but I just wanted to give everybody a heads up. That's why I sound a little different in this episode, and it will be corrected before the next episode. Okay, like I said, my apologies, everybody. Thanks so much, Zoom, for including updates that I didn't want. It's been working fine for over 5 years, and now you decided to do this. But so anyway, that's the episode, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Attention, attention, all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Findwater Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is General Amanda Reyes. Hi, Amanda. Welcome back.
Oh my God, have I been a general for a while, or is this
you? Yeah, you've been on the show every season, sometimes multiple times, and so you have now. I don't know what other rank there is to give
well,
you
how
at
many
this point.
stars do I have? I must have two stars by now, right?
There, 4 stars is the most, and I don't know what you can go beyond that. So
God,
that you're just going to be general until we
okay.
don't do any more MASH cases left to do. So. Well, thank you again for coming back. It really wouldn't be a MASHcast season, I think, without your input. So I'm so glad to have you back.
I'm happy to be here. I'm really excited about this episode, actually.
This is a tremendous, tremendous episode. This is episode
yes.
2 of season 8, of course. Are You Now, Margaret? The original air date, September 24th, 1979, written by Tad Mumford and Dan Wilcox, directed by Charles S. Dubin. The 477th is visited by the aide of a congressman, a man named R. Theodore Williamson, who says he has arrived to look into the unit and its people, ostensibly for the congressman to see how the war effort can be strengthened. Potter thinks it's just grandstanding for the congressman to win re-election, but he gives his permission for Williamson to ask around anyway. Williamson talks to Margaret and then moves on to Hawkeye and BJ, trying his best to avoid Klinger, who is busy snapping pictures of everyone in an attempt to win a contest for Stars and Stripes. Williamson's questions start out about the equipment the 477 uses, but they quickly turn to the staff, asking about what people's attitudes are and their behavior. Hawkeye and BJ, less than interested, foist him towards Winchester, who in the mess tent bores Williamson to tears by telling him endless stories about life in Boston. Hawkeye, BJ, Father Mulcahy, and Margaret compare notes, and they all have had the same experience with Williamson, asking very personal questions about the staff. Hawkeye and BJ go to Williamson and ask him directly what he's in Korea for. Williamson at first puts them off, but then quickly grows serious and asks to discuss the matter with them and Colonel Potter. In Potter's tent, Williamson reveals what his true mission is, to gather evidence about a suspected communist in the unit, Major Margaret Houlihan. Back in Potter's office, Williamson confronts Margaret with the charges, who of course protests. Hawkeye, BJ, and Potter defend her, but Williamson won't listen and insists that a former boyfriend of Margaret's in college, a man named Wally Crichton, has been named as a subversive by HUAC. Williamson then suggests that if Margaret is really as patriotic as she says, maybe she can offer up the names of some of Wally's friends, and if she refuses to do so, then she'll be ordered to testify in front of the committee. Williamson gives Margaret the choice and leaves the office. Later in the mess tent, a despondent Margaret tearfully recalls the friends she and Wally had in college. She can't bring herself to offer them up to HUAC, but she also can't volunteer to testify, knowing just being there would destroy her life and embarrass her father. Overwhelmed, she hurries out. That night, in the officers' club, Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester try to defend Margaret to Williamson and unsubtly drops hints that Margaret, a.k.a. Hot Lips, is no communist. Rather, she's a party girl. Williamson leaves. He shows up at Margaret's tent, and Margaret answers dressed in a negligee. Williamson offers to help Margaret defend herself, and within moments, he grabs her in a passionate embrace and kisses her. Just at that moment, Klinger pops out of Margaret's clothes locker, camera in hand, and snaps a picture of the two of them. Williamson, shocked, tries to figure out what's going on when Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester storm in. They tell him that they're going to send the picture to Williamson's wife if he keeps up this witch hunt. Williamson accuses them all of blackmail, but of course he was willing to let Margaret go if she slept with him. Everyone is even more disgusted when he reveals that he would have prosecuted her anyway. Margaret, sputtering, yells, "You mean you were gonna, and then you were gonna, you creep?" Williamson, knowing when he's been beaten, storms out. Later, everyone reads a copy of the new Stars and Stripes. Klinger's photo entry didn't win, but there is some good news, a story about Williamson's wife having an affair with the congressman. Apparently, the wife is driven to it since she describes her husband as being married to his country first and me second. ripped from the headlines, as you might say. So, I mean, other than the fact that it's a great episode and it's a great Margaret episode, why did you want to talk about this one, Amanda?
I think I originally picked this one because the guest star was Lawrence Pressman, and I have had a crush on Lawrence Pressman for as long as I can remember. I just love him. And I was reading some stuff about this episode, and some people who were reacting to it were saying Lawrence Pressman made a career out of playing bad guys, but I only remember him really as either ambivalent or good guys. But I know him best, and I'll just make this brief. But if I don't know if you're familiar with a kind of a pseudo documentary called The Hellstrom Chronicles, which
Oh,
is a documentary about bugs. Yeah, he's Lars Hellstrom. He's the scientist that talks you through the whole film, that's talking about how bugs are going to take over the world, and it's sex on a stick, you know. And so I've always just loved him, and I thought, oh great, a Lawrence Pressman episode, this will be fun. And he really does play a very bad guy in this, but he's still got this, there's something about him, he's got a very calming presence to me on screen that I really like, and he's wonderful in this, but I think that must have been why I originally picked it, just to get a little more Lawrence in my life.
He's one of those guys who probably one of the quintessential character actors, right? Because if you look at his credits, and I knew that he had a lot of TV movie credits, and I figured that was why you were asking. But like, he was in Shaft, and he was in 9 to 5. He's Jane Fonda's husband in that movie. He's in American Pie. Speaking of TV movies, he is in The Late Shift, which is the HBO TV movie about the Jay Leno, David Letterman takeover of The Tonight Show. And he plays NBC chairman Bob Wright. And he's actually very avuncular in that one. He's kind of like really sweet to David Letterman. And he's sort of like, I don't want you to leave. But yeah. So I was familiar with him. I love that TV movie. I've watched it a million times. And so every time some actor appears in, I'm going to mention it. So he's just one of those guys who could do movies, could do TV movies. And worked. He's still around, right? I think he's
He
still with us.
is. He
Could
is.
just
He's still working.
has right has hundreds of credits. Just never stops working. And we've talked about this in other episodes. I'm sure you and I even have, and I know I've covered it in another episode on other shows. Like, I would love to know what his life is like, right? Like, what's that life like? It's probably like the best of. I'm sure every actor has to hustle, but like, it's probably like a great way to go through life because you're constantly working, but your fame is not such that that's crushing. Like Lawrence Pressman can, not when you're around, but he could go to the supermarket and not get bothered by somebody.
No, not when I'm around. That would be messy. But yeah, no, I know. I love these actors that you see and everything because they become kind of a source of comfort too. Like, you just know if nothing else is going to be good about the film, whenever they're in there, they're going to be good. Or they just have this familiarity that's very comforting to me, you know. And he's one of those guys. He reminds me a lot. I think the actor's name is Nicholas Pryor. He just passed away, I think, last year, and he was in a mini series I covered. I did a commentary for called Noble House, and I was like, oh, I get to talk about this guy. You know what I mean? But it's hard to also encapsulate somebody's career like this. Like, I looked up Lawrence Pressman today, and I saw he has 186 credits, and it's like, that's, and he's probably done tons of theater on top of it, you know? And it's just like so amazing. Like, if you're an actor, that must be the most fulfilling kind of part, you know, career. Like, it must be great to be a movie star, you know, but it must be really great to be a character actor that gets used all the time, because then you get to do just a little bit of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And right, it's funny when you list like the IMDb lists someone as having 186 credits. If they made multiple appearances on one show, they count that as one credit, like in the grand list. So it's like he probably has even more than that if he did multiple shows. on multiple episodes of the same show. So he did like an anthology show and stuff like that. By the way, you mentioned Nicholas Pryor. Nicholas Pryor shows up in MASH in season 10, I think.
Oh.
So yeah, he's in it as well. Again, they get these TV guys. If you're a TV actor and you go back far enough, you've got MASH on your resume. You just do,
Yes.
you know. I mean, just it's the show was on for 11 years. It needed lots of actors. So the scene op the show opens with a scene in OR, which sets up that Klinger comes and says Mulcahy comes and says, "Colonel, there's someone here to visit you." And then okay, we just kind of jump right to that. And then that's when we meet Lawrence Pressman, and they have a little bit MASH. Very rarely did multi-episode continuity. This is in the very weird period where Radar had not yet left the show. That's going to be coming in a couple episodes. So they're still doing this ongoing gig where Klinger is filling in, but he's doing a poor job of it. And so Potter's office is filled with paper and it's a mess. And he mentions, "I didn't know you were coming, but that's because my temporary company clerk probably lost the notation that you were coming." So that's just a little bit of like, oh, a little bit of continuity. Like, okay, that's what's going. So fine. So he explains the Lawrence Pressman explains what he's here for, and he says, "I'm here for in response to this congressman, Daniel Lurie, and we're here to make sure that all you people have everything you need." And I love that Potter immediately jumps to, "And he's up for re-election." I love that Potter's just he's seen enough of these people to know. Okay, yeah, fine. Like he's very cynical about it, which I appreciate for a regular army man. He's just kind of, and even of course, Lawrence Press. I should say Lawrence. I shouldn't keep saying Lawrence Pressman as his name. The Williamson is his name. Is like no. This is genuine. Can I talk to everybody? And Lawrence Pressman was good at, as you say, he played a lot of bad guys, played a good guys, but he in the you know. He's not overplaying it here. I mean, at the heart
No.
of a good actor, he seems reasonable. We know this is going to be something's going to come up, but he seems okay at the beginning.
That's what I was thinking. And I you would know better than me, but this is the first time I actually think I noticed that photo of Mildred.
Oh, on his desk?
Yeah, do you see it in a lot of episodes?
Yes, you do. You
She's gorgeous.
do. I believe that is Harry Morgan's actual wife, I believe.
Oh.
I think that's his real wife in real life. I
That's so
believe
great.
so.
Yeah, it kept sticking out to me because I watched this episode a couple times and I kept getting distracted by the photo. And I was like, I can't remember if I've ever seen this before. And I'm like, wow, that's and I love that he had this like headshot of her, this like amazing, beautiful woman.
There's an episode. Oh boy, I'm blanking on whether we've already gotten to. I've done so many mash kits at this point.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we've gotten to it yet or it's coming, but there's one where Potter is really mad at Mildred. And he grabs the photo and he's about to throw it and throw it on the wall. And Klinger stops him. And he's like, "Sir, don't throw this. You'll regret it." And Potter looks at the photo talking to it and he points to Klinger and he goes, "It's lucky for you that he was here." So it's a running gag of the thing with the photo. But yes, as far as I know, that is Harry Morgan's real wife playing
Oh, that's awesome.
Mildred in at least the shot. So again, Williamson explains what he's doing. Of course, Klinger is working on another one of his scams. It's not really a scam, but another sort of thing that he's doing in lieu of work, where he is trying to get a picture, a notable picture that he can send to Stars and Stripes, where he will win a contest. Where they mention, well, the you not only do you get published, you get a date with Marilyn Maxwell. Marilyn Maxwell was one of those names that. When I watched older movies, like they would drop her name, and I never knew what she was famous for. And it seemed like she was one of those people that she was in movies, but she was kind of more famous for being famous, that kind of thing. She was like a model and stuff like that. So from context, I was like, oh, okay. Plus the way Klinger says her name, Marilyn Max, the way the same alliteration of Marilyn Monroe, of course. You're like, oh,
Yes.
okay, I get the idea. She's this sort of blonde bombshell Americana kind of woman. Okay, get that. So then we go to, of course, Margaret's tent, and Margaret is absolutely bursting with pride, right? The idea that she's going to get to talk about her service, and she immediately jumps to the idea of saying, "I can't believe I'm so close to a congressman." And he says, "Well, I'm not the congressman. I'm just the congressman's aide." And she says, "Well, that's still incredibly impressive." And then he has the line, "Yeah, I love my work. I like to think that I'm married to my country first and my wife second.
And she's like, how lovely.
She
Okay.
says it through gritted teeth. It's
Yes.
such a great take by Loretta Swit.
Well, that's so really funny because, like, I'll have a question for you at the end of this episode, but I mean, I would the old Margaret have thought that? You know what I mean? And it's kind of interesting. I feel like this episode is merging Hot Lips with the Margaret that she is now. And in ways of, like, in retrospectively, and we can talk about that towards the end when we get to the end, but yeah, she's great in this episode.
I just love the way her jaw tightens. It's just how nice.
Yeah.
It's such a great poor Margaret. but this is, she talks about how proud she is, and she says to be a woman with the rank of major stationed so close to the Korean front. And she says it could only happen in America, which of course she means completely positively, but the joke is that you're stationed where you could get killed. I guess it
Yeah.
would only happen in
Yeah.
America. But Margaret, of course, doesn't take it like that. Do you happen to remember when you saw this one? Did you see this one as an adult, or do you remember seeing it when you were younger?
I probably saw it as a kid because I saw all of these. I watched them with my parents multiple times. But I don't have a strong memory of it as a kid, and I don't know that I would have gotten the weight of it
That's what
as a
I was wondering
child.
about.
Yeah, I
Is that
think
as that?
what I like about it is the way it's structured. As an adult, I mean, as a kid, I probably would have probably thought the more dramatic parts were not as good as like the goofy stuff, because it kind of is bookended by like a lot of fun and jocularity and whatever hijinks and jokes and stuff. But the middle section's very kind of upsetting, and we talk about like that episode, the nurses, and she, you know, Loretta Swit has had her episodes, but I feel like this is a really underrated one in terms of performance. And it's like kind of harrowing to watch it as an adult, especially right now with like the climate such as it is in America, to see this kind of thing that we have sort of put behind us. And they do a really good job of like kind of showing, weight is the only word I can think of, but like the weight of what that must have been like. And it also, I wouldn't have had any like background on it. And it's so interesting because while I was watching it, I was thinking about how I only knew about how movie stars and people in the film industry were really affected by the House of Un-American Activities, you know, commission or whatever. And so I never really thought about just like a person that doesn't have the same sort of resources that somebody else might have, you know, going through something like this and how scary that must be. So yeah, it's such an interesting, like the way it's structured is so interesting. But I found that like in terms of performance, I mean, Loretta Swit really like, it starts off so light and then it gets so heavy and it's just, she really carries it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about, was that I can't recall, but like I'm thinking, but was I aware of what this was when I saw this episode? Probably not. I might have had some vague idea that that was a thing. You know, of like, oh yeah, there was like this real effort to go find communism. You know what I mean? Like, I just wonder. And it was a lot of this episode is it, you have to kind of, if you don't know it, I mean, obviously they're assuming most of the audience does know it because this is 1979 when this airs, and that was in 1952. So I mean, most they're going to assume most of the audience was either alive for it or at least learned it in school, and. So, but there's enough of a context. You're like, oh, okay, this is obviously a thing. And then, like you said, I was familiar with it being movie stars, you know, famous people being subjected to this thing, not a, you know, quote unquote regular person who doesn't have these protections. And yes, this episode, we'll get to it when we get to it. But like this episode has a little bit of and I don't mean to knock the show because it's a good episode. It has a little bit of a pat ending because first of all, they've got
Yeah.
23 minutes. And it doesn't really resolve the bigger issue that it brings up. Again, that's not fair to this show to try and do that in 23 minutes. But doing the episode when they're doing it, it has the reserve of like, oh, let's, we have the safety of, well, that's in the past. It was bad, but that's in the past. And now, like you said, we've wound our way back to that
Yeah.
very thing.
It's
So,
also kind of interesting too, because this is the year before Reagan wanted to come into office as well. And I know the Cold War existed prior to that, but me growing up, it's really the Reagan years where the Cold War really loomed heavy over us, not so much during the Carter years, you know. Of course, I would have been too young to really recognize it, but it's like when I think it's so interesting because it's almost like not that we were doing these kinds of things necessarily in the Reagan years, but this idea of communism being like on the same level as like murdering someone or something, you know what I mean? Like the depth of like how we felt about it in the 80s went off the charts. And so this is kind of like almost like predicting like a return to it. And of course, now it's like really predicting a return to it. But like even in the 80s, I think it's almost like looking forward to what's going to happen if we find ourselves in a different kind of environment, you know, to like fall back into this idea of communism taking over. And so it's such a fascinating episode in that way too. Like it's sort of a neat artifact from like in the Cold War, but not in the heart of the end of the Cold War when things really ramped up. So and then of course where we are now. So yeah, it's like just such a fascinating entry into the series.
It's again, it's I would I'm sure that the writers were probably, with all their research that they did, knew that they wanted to work this in at some point. And I wondered, like, how long did this sit? Was this in a drawer somewhere of like, we're going to get to this eventually, or was it always? And then, of course, it makes total sense. So, what person is the least likely to be the communist? Margaret. So it's going to
Right.
be it's to exemplify how ridiculous all of this, what all this hysteria was. This thing is going to be pointed at the most patriotic person in the unit, even more patriotic than Colonel Potter. It's
Yeah.
Margaret. Margaret is the least questioning of what she's doing, the least questioning of orders that she's given. You know, Potter can be a little bit of a malcontent, not malcontent, but he can be a little more, throw some elbows. Margaret's not that way.
Yes.
Margaret is all in on this kind of stuff. And so, of course, yeah, pointing at her is the most ridiculous thing. So we see Williamson questioning. Oh, by the way, the scene where she's with Margaret, he's with Margaret, and then he says, I want to talk to Hawkeye, and I want to talk to Pierce and Honeycutt. Where are they? Oh, they're in the post op. And there's this, all of a sudden the camera cuts to them outside. She comes outside and points and says, it's right there. In syndication, the whole following scene where Klinger shows up in drag and there's this whole interplay between the three of them, all that was cut in syndication. But because Margaret says it's right there, and then her next line is a half second later, it was the most abrupt cut in the world when I used to watch the syndicated. And even as a kid, I'd be like, is that how this show was cut? That seems kind of weird. Like they open the door, she opens the door, she goes, it's right there. And then they cut to the next thing. And I'm like, wow, this show was really kind of all right. I guess that's the way the show was just edited. But like, no, it's because they cut the whole scene of Klinger or whatever. So, okay. So then we find him, Williamson, talking to Hawkeye. And Hawkeye is being Hawkeye, as you might expect. And the first thing that catches Williamson's eye is that one of the patients is a North Korean who's got a head bandage. And Williamson's like, what is that about? And this has always thrown me on this show, because every time this comes up, where we find that that 477 is treating a North Korean, there's always somebody who's offended at this or is like, what is that? And I've always been like, either treating them is standard operating procedure or it's not. You know what I mean? Like, it's either okay to do it or it's not okay to do it. I never understand why it's sort of like an argument every time. Like, clearly, like, I don't think Potter either approves of it or he doesn't. And Hawkeye's not just doing this on the fly. So it's always weird to me that, like, and this scene, Williamson's like, you know what? And you're like, well, either that's a standard, that's a rule or it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's just there in this episode to kind of give us a hint of where it's going because it really surprised me. I thought that was going to be budget cuts. I thought he was going to come and be like, we're just going to like take everything away and you're gonna have to figure out how to do surgery without like your scalpels or whatever, you know. So it really takes a turn, but I guess this is a foreshadowing moment.
Yeah, right. But he's immediately like, well, what is going on here? I
Yeah.
don't like that. So they then go back to the swamp, and he gets to see sort of Hawkeye and BJ in full flower. If you watch these shows a million times like I do, you'll happen to notice that on the upper left side of the screen, you can see the set, the actual like back wall of the set
Oh.
of the set. They pulled the corner up too high. The camera, I guess, was poised in the wrong spot, so you can just literally see the back of the set going there. But I always enjoy those because it's like, oh, okay, you know, once in a while they made a mistake. It's okay. So Williamson's talking to Hawkeye and BJ, and they are not giving him any sort of straight answers. And he's, you know, and they, he's, he even says something to the effect of, "I'm not going to get anywhere unless you guys just keep joking around." And you know, he's being a little disingenuous. You can see he's being like maybe a little too slick. And then he keeps poking. He says, "Let's get back to the people." You know, you're, and then he finally asks about Winchester, and of course they find that hysterical. And we cut to Winchester and Williamson in the mess tent, and Winchester is figuring this is a great audience for one of his boring stories. And in this case, he's talking about like I think he's on his he's doing what is the what sport are they doing? A croquet or
Oh,
something?
maybe something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So, and he says, "On Pegasus, I cried," and he's doing
Yes, right.
this. He's not paying attention at all that Williamson does not care about any of this. And then he even says, "That's fascinating, Major. I've been really interested in your life after Boston." And then Winchester says, "There is no life after Boston." So that's a great, you know, a little bit of a gag of like Winchester's just, oh, a new person to tell my exciting stories to because everyone else has heard them. So Margaret shows up, and there's a little bit with Klinger, and then they sit down with Mulcahy, and Mulcahy starts talking about, "I found some of these questions highly personal," and they start running away with their imagination, and they talk about that maybe they're thinking about it's budget cuts. Is that what's going to happen? Is that, you know, I mean, how could you budget cut on a MASH? And Margaret is like, "You're jumping to conclusions, you know. How do we know? You know, come on, what are you doing?" And so they go to him, Williamson, directly. And there's this great moment with Lawrence Pressman where they press him a little. And all of a sudden, the smile on his face goes away.
Yeah.
And he has this very kind of menacing look. And he says nothing. And then they're going to cut to where they're talking to Potter. But I love the turn on his face. You're like, oh, uh-oh. This is something's real bad here.
Yeah, it's where the whole like mood changes. Like it starts off like any MASH, where it's just the fun. And the one thing I noticed, so I keep thinking that they had this, they dropped the laugh track way before this in my mind, but it's here. But the way they use the laugh track on the show is almost like a work of art to me, because there are parts that are clearly funny, but they won't use the laugh track depending on the situation, like surgery or whatever. And but here it's like the laugh track drops out for a while, and then it becomes this drama, and then it goes back. And it's just so fascinating when I sit and kind of pay attention to it. But yeah, he has this turn, and you're like, oh, this is becoming sort of suspenseful. Like, what does he want? And all of a sudden, it's like all these things, he was just sort of there, and they were just joking around. And then I became really intrigued by what was going to happen. And then, of course, it went somewhere I absolutely was not expecting.
By the way, in that moment where they're sitting at the other table and they see that Williamson's talking to Winchester and Hawkeye and BJ get up, if you notice, on the right side of the frame is Father Mulcahy, and then sitting at the end of the table is Loretta Swit. The camera starts to pan over the table to zoom in on the conversation that's going to happen in the back part of the set. And if you'll notice, Loretta Swit gets up and gets out of the frame. And there really isn't any story reason for Margaret to do that, but she does it because I'm sure the camera movement, when they blocked it, they were like, "Well, we got to get Loretta Swit out of the frame as the
Yeah.
camera's moving." And I just, it's always so impressive to me when you think about that, how much actors have to think about, right? They have to
Yeah.
know their lines. They have to know the, you know,
Whole
they literally
blocking,
have to
yeah.
know what, yeah, they know what they have to say, but they also have to have all that stuff in their head of like, okay, well, now I got to go to this mark and hit this thing. Like, just to have all that in your brain is just so impressive.
Yeah, this is a random piece of trivia, but on Young and the Restless, there's this actor, Peter Bergman, and he not only memorizes his lines, but he always memorizes the lines of his scene partner because it helps him,
Oh, wow.
yeah, to like react properly and have the conversation. And so, and he's on like most of the episodes. He's one of the stars of the show. And it's like, and every time I watch him, I'm like waiting for his lips to move when the other actor's talking because he's, but he like memorizes not just his scene, his part in the scene, the entire scene is in his head. And it's like just the idea of that. And he's also a very natural actor, so he does all the movements and stuff. So he's got to do that. But that blew my mind when I read that.
Does he have like a photographic memory? How the hell does he do that?
I guess when you work on a soap, you get really good at it. But it's just a device that he personally uses because I think it helps him to know exactly what the other person is going to say to help him react. Maybe it's just a device for him, but it's just, I can't even imagine knowing your own lines on, especially a soap where they do like 80 pages a day. But like,
Yeah.
so yeah, it's really fascinating. And like, you think that sometimes if you'll see it on a stage for sure, but sometimes on TV shows, if they're not paying attention, you can see where like the tape is on the floor.
Yeah, the little X's and
Like
stuff.
the
Yeah.
so they make sure everybody hits their spot and they have to go and make it look natural. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I'm always just so impressed that you have to have all that technical stuff in your head on top of the art of the performance. Now, of course, these actors have been playing these parts for 7, 8, 9 years, but still, you're still having to deliver new lines and make it sound believable and stuff like that. And then you also got to remember, oh, geez, I gotta move over to this other bench because the camera's moving. Yeah, it's just impressive. Again, it's the only kind of thing you only notice it because I've seen these 40 million times. So then we go into Potter's tent, which again underscores like how serious this is, that they're waking Potter up. This can't wait till the morning. They're gonna do it right now. And Hawkeye and BJ are joking around. They're not taking him seriously. And then finally Potter says, basically, boys, quiet down. I think this guy's got something like serious stuck in his craw. And then he says, this MASH unit is harboring a communist sympathizer. And there's a great moment where Hawkeye and BJ immediately look at each other like, oh, please. Like they're not taking this seriously. They're like, oh, come on. Potter is taking it seriously. And he says, one of my people, a commie, who are you talking about? And then Williamson does this great, Lawrence Pressman does this great thing where he like juts his jaw out and like sticks his neck like he's it, it's like he's he throws his shoulders back like he's so proud about what he's about to say. It's like, dude, come on, you really are in love with yourself. And of course he delivers the name Major Margaret Hulahan, which of course makes everybody start screaming, what are you talking about? And that's our act break, one of the best act breaks ever, right? It's the greatest, like, what? I can't. I'm going to sit through the Rice-A-Roni commercial to get to the other side of this episode.
You're right. Like Pressman's doing a really good job in this, like just kind of walking this line because he comes across as just sort of a guide there, and then he becomes sort of like a real villain by the end of it, And you're right, he does sort of do this whole like peacock feathers, check me out kind of thing. I just love him.
So we now join everybody, including Margaret, in Potter's office. And of course, Margaret talks about, I've always done my best to be a model American. And again, great performance by Loretta Swit, where she's so strident. And because, of course, other members of the unit, Hawkeye, BJ, Klinger, even Winchester, if they were accused of this, they would be mad because it's not true. Margaret is mad because it's not true, and also it just offends her on a like a molecular level to be accused of that. And I love that I love that little extra little bit of tension, is that this is the one person who is just down to her bones offended at being called this. And you can see it in her face, the way that Loretta Swit delivers this performance. Lawrence again, Williamson, I keep saying Lawrence Pressman. Williamson goes through this file and he talks about, well, there's a guy that we're looking at, this Wally Crichton, or he says Wallace Crichton, and then because she knows him as Wally Crichton, and he says, well, it was into the you two were quite, and he puts this great sleazy pause, close, and she's like, we dated, But that was ages ago. And he's like, didn't weren't you constant companions? Didn't you go to like many different things together, including like dances and the parties, pods, motels, which again, like mind your own business. And then one of the great laugh lines of the episode is where she says, "I resent that implication. We never went to a hotel." Pause. Wally had a Nash.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was. I looked it up and I was like, oh, this is hilarious. And so when I rewatched it again, it was definitely like really, especially the way she says it. Like it's not the sex that is the insinuation of sex, but like that they went to a hotel somehow is worse
Yeah,
than
and
the
then
car.
oh my God, I love the way she did. Well, he had a Nash, like just like, and then they cut to Potter and Hawkeye, and Hawkeye does the, I don't know, that's one of the great eye rolls of all time. Like,
That's
oh my
right,
God, and like you, I would have not have known what a Nash, what Nashes were long gone before you and I came along. But I just knew from the context. Okay, it wasn't a hotel. She's not denying they had lots of sex. It just wasn't in a
yeah, I
hotel.
know. I love that. That was the part that got me, like her response to it. No, we had this great car that has this back seat you could turn into a bed.
So good. In such a serious scene, it's such a puncture of a laugh of Margaret just being like, well, he had a Nash. She just
Well, it also kind of
wonderfully.
shows how innocent she is of all this, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, all she can think about is like this fun time she had with this guy. It was clearly not like, I mean, they were together for a while, but it didn't come across like this relationship where they were like having heavy duty political talks all the time and stuff. It was
Yeah.
like this cute guy that she was dating for fun and while she was in school, you know? And I think that line really underscores it.
Yeah, it's really, really great stuff. So Williamson goes on and on about it. He says, well, we think he's a subversive. He was belonged to a group called Freedom for America, which of course he's like, okay, oh yeah, that's terrible. And yeah, BJ and Hawkeye are not taking, like kind of like in the previous scene, not taking this terribly seriously. Like they just yeah, they talk about we found the communists in the State Department and the this department, and BJ even says, yeah, in Woolworths, you can find them in the Notions department. I mean, they're just not. And then Williamson says, where there's smoke, there's fire. And Hawkeye says, yeah, I'll just ask Joan of Arc. So they're not taking this seriously, but there is this wonderful push in and then pan up to Harry Morgan as Potter, who is, like I mentioned with Margaret, now deeply offended. Now he's had his fill of
That's
this.
right.
And he says, your whole case is a busload of bourgeois. And he says, you're talking about the finest nurse I've ever scrubbed with. Which I think is from Potter, an enormous compliment, right? Think of
Yes.
all the nurses that he's worked with in his time. And we already know that they have this wonderful father-daughter relationship. And then he says, and you've shown no evidence that she's done anything to undermine this unit. And she's like, I haven't done anything. And then she talks about Wally. And again, I love that in the records, he's Wallace Crichton, which sounds very serious. And then when she says Wally Crichton, like, it immediately kind of lowers the temperature. Like, okay, he's just a guy, whatever.
Yeah.
And she says, we had fun, and it was another subversive about it. And now Williamson is in full villain mode, because he says all you have to do to if it was really that so innocent, all you have to do with is tell me who some of Mr. Crichton's associates were. And he's like, what do you mean? He says, well, people he associated with. And she's like, I don't remember these names. Some were Wally's, some were mine. And again, she's just sort of flummoxed at all this. And Potter says, what makes her personal life business? What's her personal life, your business anyway? And then finally he pulls out that, well, if the major has nothing left to hide, a few simple questions aren't going to do any harm, which of course is the proverbial like camel nose under the tent kind of thing. It's like, oh, well, this step, you're willing to buckle this far. I'll get you to buckle this far, which again,
Yeah.
we're living in right this moment as we're recording this. You're going to
It's
buckle this far. We'll get you to buckle further if because we know we're going to keep pushing.
like it reminds me of the witch trials. Like it's like, oh, so what we'll do is we'll try to drown you, and
Yeah.
if you actually drown, you're not a witch, right? And you're like,
Right.
okay, so Okay, that doesn't really make sense, but
Doesn't
okay.
exonerate me in any way,
Yeah,
so
and
thank
you
you.
can see that like it's starting to become this thing where like she's not gonna be able to, no decision will be the right decision.
And then BJ even says, you know about the committee, Margaret, you need to hang yourself or hang your friends. And then Margaret, her voice drops down an octave. She sits down and she starts rocking back
Yes.
and forth, which I thought was a nice touch, right? That she's sitting in that chair that sits under the window and she starts to rock. Like that's a sort of like a self heal, not self healing, but like self comforting movement. I can't say we've ever seen Margaret do it in other episodes because this one's so unique, but it, I have to, I'll say like we, I have a niece who, when she was a little kid and we would take her out and she had a really, this kid came from Russia and had a really rough life. And when we would take her out and she was happy, she would rock back and forth and she didn't even know she was doing it. And it was like a self-soothing thing. And in
Yeah.
her case, it was like she was so happy that that's how her, it manifested. But it's, and it just reminded me to see Margaret. I've never really seen Loretta Swit do that with this character. I've seen her move back and forth. Like she's so, she's of course feeling pinned. She's feeling trapped by this guy. And so that's what she's doing. Again, I may be reading a lot into it, but it seems like a nice little thing that Loretta Swit threw in.
Yeah, I really liked it too. That's when I started to like, well, I felt like she was starting to break a little, you know, and she wasn't sure what to do, obviously. And that was just sort of the response to it while she was like, it was almost like thinking had to become like a physical action because there was, she couldn't absorb what was happening, you know.
It's, and then it's it, they're all standing near the end of the scene. Williamson is standing up, and Potter is standing up, and Hawkeye is standing up, and BJ is sort of standing up. He's sitting, and it's Margaret is sitting down, and so she's sort of diminished in the frame. You
Yeah.
know, it's almost like she's a child the way they're, you know, her kind of her future is being now controlled by this guy. So then we cut to the next day, and they're in the mess tent, and she makes a joke about, do you, she says to Hawkeye and BJ, you sure you two want to be seen with me? And so I love that she's already layering that on top of herself. Like there's nobody at this unit, right? Even if the story has gotten around, which I don't know how it would have, but like nobody at the 477 thinks Margaret's a communist.
Right.
This is not a thing. But you clear, she's just devastated with this. And so she starts talking about the people she knew in college, Emily Kingsley, and he collected Ruskell, she Buddy Gerlach, the school chug-a-luck champ. I always wonder about these names that writers insert into TV shows. Like are they people they knew or like Buddy Gerlach? That feels like a real name, right? I don't think that's a name you come up with, Buddy Gerlach. It sounds very specific.
Yeah, I love the names. And I love that I actually had thoughts about Wally while I was watching this. I actually worried about him. Like she makes these people feel real, especially Wally, because she goes into depth, you know, about like, not like, oh, he was like this and that, but like the idea of them together was so sweet in her memory that he it seemed like, oh my God, what are they doing to this poor guy? You know, that she can't even see what's happening to him and what could be happening to these people that she remembers so fondly. And so I love these like very specific kind of naming and things like that, but also that you can kind of see them in your head too when she's talking about them, and they become people too. And you're like, wow, these people are like potential victims of this really awful thing that's happening.
She it's a tr again terrific moment for Loretta Swit to kind of be able to just sit there and talk about these people. And yeah, it's very evocative.
Yeah.
This idea of like Margaret, when back when Margaret was probably a little looser, you know, and probably was a lot of fun and was obviously very dedicated, but just wasn't didn't have the weight of command, the weight of people under her and stuff like that. And then she talks about that she can't testify because, you know, she even says, you know, yeah, it would ruin my career. That's bad enough, but I can't stand what it would do to my father. Now we haven't met him yet. He'll come in season 9, Howitzer Al Houlihan, but we've heard enough about him. We know that he was a colonel and stuff like that, and so you get the sense that yeah, that they know that, and they're using that leverage against her. That it would just the shame of it would be so bad that she's going to buckle. And she starts to cry, and she runs out of the tent, and it's just, you know, it's awful. It's just awful to watch her go through this. So
Yeah.
then we go to the O Club, and there's a moment with Williamson and Igor, and then Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester come in. Now, what we don't know watching this episode, you learn it after you go, is that in the cut between that scene and this scene, the plan has been hatched. We now know that the plan that they're going to do has been hatched. Do you, I mean, they've only got 23 minutes. They can only do so much. But what would you think about if, I guess it's, would you have liked to have seen a scene where they're maybe planning something, or do you think it's better as a surprise?
I like it better as a surprise because you can kind of tell that they're l leading him somewhere. But when Margaret responds to him at first, anyway, you're not real sure she knows that they've been leading him. And so I like that aspect of it. I like kind of knowing they're doing something, but I'm not quite sure what. And then not quite sure knowing that she knows either. Then it kind of seems like it because she's so willing to like, oh, you can make things better if we do this or whatever. And you're like, okay, she wouldn't do that. So you know something's going to happen. And then you get the little surprise with Klinger and stuff. So yeah, I kind of like the element of surprise that's in it. And I also like that I don't know when the last time they called her Hot Lips was. I don't know if it continued on past Frank Burns and the kind of reconfiguration of her character, but I kind of like the recall, you know, quite a bit. And they're overplaying it, and you can tell they are because all those things are saying, even I don't agree with a lot of that, but like the way that, oh, she dated half the generals too, you know, and they're like, oh, they would never say that, right? But they are, we're remembering a much different Margaret, you know, and that's why I made a note here that I would have been curious to see what a script for this particular premise would have looked like when she was with Frank Burns. Because how would that have played out? Would she have been more willing to turn somebody over? And how would Frank have reacted? Like, it's so interesting. So it's kind of helping us see her growth. And it's also consistent with the character, how she used to be. And so there's something about that scene that I think the writing's really good there. It's showing all these years of us getting to know Margaret and how much she's grown and where she used to be and where she is now. And in just this very short moment when they're talking to him in the bar. So I like that all of that is just kind of comes and we don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I actually had that in my notes that this might be the last mention of Hot Lips. The term in the previous season, there was an episode called Hot Lips is Back in Town, but that is purposely a kind of a throwback to the old persona. And it's interesting. It's an interesting thought of what this episode would have played like with the during the Frank Burns years. I mean, Frank would have given it up. He would have voluntarily, you know, I mean, good Lord, he would have been happy to give up
We would have been
names.
turning over Hawkeye without any proof, and it would have been done for like much more humor than we see in this episode. But it would have been really interesting to see how that Margaret would have understood what was happening compared to this Margaret. And I thought about that for a while, and of course that didn't happen. And I would think I would prefer this episode, but it's just such an interesting idea. So they're really calling back to like I think her growth in just this short moment, and I really like that.
Williamson is kind of like sort of asking for sympathy, saying, I know my work can be very unpopular. And they're kind of like, what, are you really coming to us for sympathy? And then he realizes that lane isn't getting him anywhere. And so he kind of switches lanes into like, well, you know, it's my job to root out, you know, communism. And then there's an earlier line about the Red Menace, and Hawkeye's like, don't tell me about the Red Menace. We're filled with it every day. But then there's this great Winchester moment where he says, "Sir, I am so conservative that I make you look like a New Dealer," which I think is, I love that. I love that to Winchester, that is such an insult, right? To call someone a New Dealer is such a lancing blow. But I love that Winchester's now part of it, right? I've said this in previous episodes. It's fun to have some conflict. You know, I don't want the show to become just everybody gets along. But I also like when Winchester becomes part of the guys too. So I
Yes, very
like that he's in
much.
on it, and I like that he rises to Margaret's defense. Just
Yes, absolutely.
it's really great.
Yeah, he's definitely such a warmer character compared to Frank Burns, and I do like that they purposely send Lawrence Pressman's character to go talk to him because they know it's going to drive him nuts. But at the same time, when the chips are down, he's going to be there for you know? And it's just really cool. And again, it's talking about, we're going to talk about Margaret's growth. We also have this very well-rounded character in Winchester too, very dimensional, and with all these different layers. And so, you see it actually in this episode. So it's great.
And you're right. They are obviously overselling it because when BJ says, why don't you leave her alone? Let her do the things she likes to do, like nursing and having a good time. And then Hawkeye's like, having a great time. And you realize, yeah, they would never talk about her like
No.
that. Yeah. So, and of course, Williamson immediately picks up on it where he says, promiscuity is hardly a defense. So
I'll be right
obviously,
back.
he picks up, he picks up exactly what they're putting down. And then we cut to him showing up in Margaret's tent, and of course she's not wearing fatigue. She's wearing this sort of like pink negligee kind of thing.
It's so pretty. I remember when I was like, wow, she looks great.
And he is just being as, absolutely sleazy as possible. And he says, "Can we discuss your case again?" And then he's, we see that he's layering all this in, and he's doing it, and he keeps going on and on. And then he grabs her, and he's like, I need to know you better than something from a cold and personal document. And he mentions, I haven't sent in any papers yet. And he says, we need to get closer, Margaret. And I love that the way Loretta Swit, Margaret starts doing kind of a breathy voice.
Yes,
She's like, closer.
closer. And that's when you know she's fully aware of what's going
Yeah,
on, you
right.
know?
Like that her voice drops down a half register. Closer. It's great. It's a marvelous performance by Loretta Swit. So they go into this embrace, and then the closet opens. Klinger flashes the photo, which flashes the camera, and he says, VIP makes major mistake. And it goes back into the thing. And I love Margaret's response where he goes, what was that? And she's like, it's 10 o'clock.
That's so great. All that stuff with him in the closet is great. Like when they come and have you seen it? Somebody's in there. I've been in here for 20 minutes and I haven't seen anybody. Like it's so funny.
And he even says, what is he doing with that camera? And Winchester says, he appears to be rewinding. What, pray tell, were you doing? And he starts to laugh a little bit. And I never know whether that's, it's okay if the character's laughing, because it doesn't ruin the scene or anything. But it feels like that's actually David Ogden Stiers laughing a little. Just the way he says, what, and pray tell, were you? And he just kind of like has this little lilt in his voice. And then he says, and then she's like, what about you? And he says, I never would have, she says, what about you, lecherous hypocrite? You sure I'm a communist, but for a little tumble, you let me off the hook. And he says, don't be absurd. I would have never let you off the hook. And I love the pauses that she puts. She goes, I mean, you were gonna, and then you were, and then she does that Margaret high register, you creep. It's such a great, so offended, right, on so many levels for numerous reasons, because again, he's just such an absolute jerk. And then they make the joke about, you still got his three poses for a quarter, still got two photos to go. And he says, you can have one for each face. And then he says, well, you've been duped by a communist sympathizer. And Winchester says, what a coincidence, so have you. And that is the exit line for Lawrence Pressman in this episode, and that resolves it. Now, I mean, we'll have the button. We'll talk about the button scene in a second. But like I said earlier, I give this episode credit for bringing up something that was going on during this time. But this ending doesn't address any of that, because obviously it just gives an out that he's a pig, and blackmail is going to be the thing that fixes it. And I don't I think it's a great episode. But it is a little like, oh, you brought up this very serious thing, and then it really doesn't get addressed because they have this convenient out.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess it was such a huge issue, so I don't know.
Yeah, how do you address it, right?
Yeah, I don't know how they could have made it so like they saved the world. You know what I mean? Like I guess they had to just work on Margaret and hope for the best, but But I like this ending. I like the way it goes back and forth between like pretty funny to like super serious and like deadly harrowing serious, and then back to being really funny. It's kind of an interesting sort of setup that they've have for this episode. And I kind of really like it. You're never really sure what is going to happen from scene to scene in a way.
Yeah. So then in the button scene, everyone except Father Mulcahy. I don't know why Father Mulcahy is not in the scene. He should be. They have the whole cast. Why not? Why is he missing? But he's not there. Klinger delivers the newspaper and he talks about that he never actually sent the photo in that he managed to take. So we really didn't get out of the contest. And then they see a story, Scandal Rocks Capitol Hill, about the Williamson's wife was caught in a Washington love nest with the congressman, which, oh, isn't that quaint that that would be a scandal nowadays, right? Wouldn't that
Oh, so innocent.
so in such an innocent time. But we see that, yes, the L. Shirley Williams has been sleeping with the congressman. So, and there's a quote from her about my, he's married, my husband is married to his work first and me second. And then Margaret gets fittingly the final line where she says, oh, no, it makes sense. He says, he had the congressman's ear and she got everything else. And boom, that's our exit line. So it's a nice upbeat ending for, at times, a very, very serious episode.
Yes.
I should mention Radar does not appear in this episode. This, in fact, he will be leaving the show in just a couple of shows. He's not in this one at all. But yeah, this is a really terrific show. And again, I give them credit for mentioning this, for even bringing it up, and as you said, the idea that this could be, this weapon could be wielded on regular people that don't have a way to defend themselves the way other act, not that a lot of actors' careers and writers, their careers were ruined because of
Yes,
this.
they were.
A lot of them had to go to England. Some of them were just destroyed entirely. There's a lot, there's been a couple of great movies about this subject. There's been documentaries about this subject. So, but again, I give MASH credit for bringing it up at all, and again pointing it at towards the character that's the most, and that even underscores the ridiculousness of this whole thing, is that it would, that this giant blundering weapon would be aimed at the most patriotic person in the entire unit.
It just shows the absurdity of what people went through back then and this kind of madness that I guess we were hoping was in our past, you know. And in a way, I mean, I was said at the beginning, they're sort of predicting something. Maybe they're just trying to remind people. Like, this was a really insane era for, and a lot of people were hurt from it. And here's just a little reminder of what it does. And let's all think about Wally Crichton and hope that he's okay. You know what I mean?
I
And
mean,
so,
right,
but
yeah.
it didn't. We watched it, and we probably paid attention then. But I don't know. We never learn, do we?
No. Again, when I first started this podcast, this episode's premise was safely tucked away as part of history, and now we've wound our way back.
Yeah, fascinating.
so, yay us. So, do you have a favorite line or joke from the episode?
I do, and it's so funny that you said that scene was cut out with Klinger in the dress because he's got this great line where, you know, he's been trying to talk Lawrence Pressman's character into like telling the congressman there's this crazy guy, and he's like, my boss doesn't deal with Section 8 or whatever. And I don't remember what leads up to the line, but Klinger says, now, sir, obviously a guy like me is unfit to defend his country unless we're attacked by the House of Dior. And I love that line because me being a fashion person that I am, I really appreciated it. And I do want a war with the House of Dior. I'm ready.
Yeah, that whole day. I talk about this at every show. I'm always fascinated about who, when the local syndicators got a hold of these episodes, how they edited it. Sometimes they did trims from every scene. They took 5 seconds out of like four scenes, and then other times they lopped just an entire scene out and just went on with it. And then in this case, it was just the episode. The syndicated one is the same as the full one, except for that scene. And again, just feels that hard edit of Margaret. But yeah, the Klinger gets kind of lost in this episode because he just gets the beginning with the camera and then he comes back in at the end. So for me, I like, I mean, there's a bunch of great gag. I mean, Wally had a Nash is just like one of their all-timers. But I like when Williamson asks Potter if he's heard of the congressman that he works for. And Potter just says, no, we don't get a lot of newspapers here. The paperboy keeps throwing him in the minefield.
That's right.
That's a good gag of like, Yeah, we don't, things are not normal around here. How do
Yeah.
we
I also like the one where Alan Alda's talking about Hanukkah, and he says he eats with his hands. And what does he say? He says, "Well, I don't want them to eat alone."
Yeah, I don't want to eat alone.
That was really funny too. It's a
Mike
throwaway line, but it's funny.
Farrell was incredibly tan this season. He must have gone to like a really nice vacation over the summer because BJ is like tropical colored. I'm like, how did he get tan when everyone else didn't at the unit? I don't understand. But yeah, he looks very healthy in this episode. So, well, Amanda, it's I again, I don't feel like it would be a season of MASHcast without you involved, and I'm just always very flattered that you would take time out. You have a lot of things going on. You have a lot of projects. You're watching a TV movie every day this year,
Yes.
day 265 of my TV movie project. But so, it's always great to talk to you. So thank you for coming back on.
Thank you. I really love it because I think I said this before. I watched MASH a lot growing up, but now I just watch it kind of sporadically. And it's always nice when I do this show because it reminds me how much I really enjoy it, and how much I love the actors on it, and it helps me like want to go back and revisit it and stuff. And so it's always a great refresher for me.
Well, thank you very much. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out there on the
I
internet?
guess the best place to look is just look up Made for TV Mayhem. I think that's my handle on Blue Sky, and then that's my Facebook group page or whatever you call it. And I think I'm Made for TV Mayhem on Instagram as well.
Okay. One last thing before I do the Patreon shout outs. And I didn't prepare Amanda for this, everybody. I'm going to embarrass her a little bit, and you're just going to have to sit here and take it.
Okay.
Is some of you that are follow me on my social media, or some people I'm friends with on social media, you kind of know some of the other projects I'm doing. And in the last couple of years, I've had the opportunity, the great opportunity, to start doing audio commentary tracks for various catalog titles that are getting put on Blu-ray. It's been the kind of thing that I wanted to do ever since like DVDs came out, and there were such a thing as audio commentaries. I've bought movies just to hear the audio comment. Like, yeah, that movie's not that great, but I want to hear the audio commentary. And it's been something I always wanted to do. And in the last couple of years, I've gotten to do it. And I've done more than a dozen of them at this point. And I have
Wow.
different ones at different levels of production. And I want to publicly thank you, Amanda, because you have been absolutely instrumental in helping me achieve that dream. First of all, you were just encouraging in the beginning when I was like, how do I do this? And you were like, just email these people. And I'm like, really? You're like, yeah, just go email these people, start doing it. And for many years, I was emailing these people with no response, no response, like just crickets. And there were times where I was like, should I just give up on this? Because I'm not getting anywhere with this. And you were always very encouraging and like, no, just keep trying. If it's nothing, 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 and then it hits, and there's no warning. It just happens, and that is exactly what happened. I just kept emailing, 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 and then it started to happen. And then once you get one, you get two, and you get two, and you get three. And then on top of that, you've also been very generous about literally handing me contacts, reaching out to people. This year, I am part of a set from Kino Lorber. You're on the same set, Amanda, the Late Night Mysteries.
Yes.
That'll be out by the time everyone hears this. But like, Kino Lorber was a label that I saw when I worked at the video store in the 90s. And like, that was a dream that I would get to be on. I was like one of my white whales. I was like, I really want to land something at Kino Lorber. And I helped land it because you recommended me. And so you have been absolutely instrumental in helping me achieve something that is so, it is the most, in terms of my professional life, it is the most rewarding thing I have been associated with these commentaries. The thing that personally is the most rewarding to me. And it would not have happened without your encouragement in every way. So I want to thank you publicly for doing that.
Oh, what a nice thing to say. You're very welcome. I enjoyed doing it, helping you and to putting the, so that set that we're on, the Dan Curtis one, that was really fun. And you and Dan in particular seemed so right for that particular entry, you know? And it was, I loved recommending you guys for that. And I know I recommended you guys for something else, the David Jansen movie, the
Oh, the Swiss
Swiss
Conspiracy, yes.
Conspiracy, yeah. And I like doing that when especially when I get projects. So what I've learned is sometimes I get offered things that just aren't right for me, and I don't like to say no to people,
Sure.
But I like to say no when I can not like it, but I prefer to say it when I can find somebody that I think can do the job that they're looking for. And it's been great to like have you guys do some of this stuff, you know? And you invited me on the Dark Knight of the Scarecrow commentary. So you helped me.
Well, it's that's the thing about that I've learned from being part of the commentary world is that it is a very I'm gonna keep going on and on about this, everybody, because I know whoever's listening is like, what does that have to do with Mac? But it is a very generous community because I am now friends with other people that do commentaries, and I have asked other people, hey, you did something for X company. I can't get a name. Can you give me that? And every single person I've ever asked is like, oh yeah, here you go. Tell them I recommended you. That's amazing because I don't necessarily always have people aren't always like that, you know. You
Right.
know, and so it's just been an enormously welcoming bunch of people that do this at a level that I aspire to do it. But like as I'm sitting here, I have my little shelf of the movies that I have had my name on, and it is just every time one comes in the mail, one of those comp copies that you get, your mailbox must be filled with comp copies because you do so many of these.
It can be sometimes, yeah. And I love it. I'm exactly with you when it comes in. It's
Oh,
like the neatest thing to hold that in your hand
it really
and be
is.
like, well, I'm a part of this. That's so great. Yeah, it
It's
feels so good.
and now again, by the time everyone has heard this, this will have already taken place. But I have now moved on to, I don't want to say the next level, as this is somehow better. It's just different. I am gonna within a week of us sitting here recording this, I'm gonna be doing a live on stage introduction to two movies at a movie
Oh.
theater. And I'm not used to being on I'm not I don't want to be on stage, but this is something I want to do, and I'm pushing through the fear. And I booked it, and now I'm gonna get to do it. And I know you've done a lot of live stuff, and
Yeah.
so this is like the next thing that I'm going to do, and I'm very excited. I'm very nervous, but I'm very excited. And this is just, again, this is the kind of thing that I never thought I would get to do. And I don't know if I would have moved further if I had not had you being supportive and saying, nope, just keep
Oh.
trying. Trust me. It's nothing. And then it's something. And that's exactly how it's happened. Is this like I've been pushing to get gigs at this, you know, one label and nothing. And then all of a sudden you get an email and they're like, you want to do this? Yes. So again, I want to keep going on and on, but I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you on. I know I thanked you privately, but I want everyone to hear it. I want to thank you
Oh,
publicly because you were just an enormous help.
well, you're very welcome.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. Of course, you can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. You can find all the episodes on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. If you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, you can go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock the various rewards, and one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Dennis Bailey, Darrell Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, no relation, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Rich Schramm, Billy Schulman, and Mike Thomas. Thanks so much for your supporting MASHcast. I really appreciate it. So we will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
I need to learn more than I could from some cold and personal
Well,
document.
tell me what I can
We need
do.
to be closer, Margaret. Much closer.
Closer?
Right.
VIP makes major mistake.
What was that?
It's 10 o'clock.